Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
San Antonio District Judge resigns after a federal corruption probe.
A former San Antonio, Texas judge goes to federal prison after pleading guilty to accepting bribes in exchange for rigging cases in his court. Angus McGinty committed the ultimate judicial sin. Why did you do it?
I did it because I was foolish.
Listen to How to Bribe a Judge on RevolverPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that for us tonight.
Big jab there from Duffy and Brett Mears. Hurt now.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Oh, we're back, folks. Back after the bye week, and great to be with all of you. It is Monday, November 29th. The year is still 2021. It's episode 326 of the Anik and Florian podcast. Ken Flo, did you enjoy the week off? Miss me at all?
I did. I ate way too much. Was a bad boy. But other than that, yes, I did miss you.
Yeah, I've been cutting weight the last 48 hours. I think I was like in my own little eating competition on Thursday to see if I could do like 6,000-7,000 calories. We cleared 7,000 calories. There's no doubt about it. But man, this MMA news cycle just continues to give. We'll talk a little bit today about the main event offering between Beneil Dariush and Islam Makhachev. That should provide further clarity, of course, atop the lightweight division. That one's in February. So we'll get some thoughts from Ken Flo, an early handicap on that. Time permitting, some thoughts on Triad Combat. Am I pronouncing that right, Ken Flo?
Yes.
Triad. Sure. In our pre-show meeting, like triage. Triad Combat. Platinum Mike Perry reportedly making $250,000 to show. Oof. And victorious in a triangle over the weekend. But we were obviously not here during Thanksgiving week. So I would like to get your thoughts, at least off the top in headlines, on the main event between Ketlin Vieta and Misha Tate. Unanimous decision for Vieta, 48-47 times two. Dissenting judge, 49-46, 4-1. All three judges in favor of Ketlin Vieta. I would agree with Misha Tate that as an observer, a somewhat distracted observer, mind you, I thought it was a relatively close fight, but I thought Ketlin Vieta was certainly the winner. Your thoughts on the main event a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, I think I saw it the same way. I think that I saw some major improvements as far as some of the striking mechanics of Misha Tate. I thought she was a much better striker out there, made some excellent progress there, but I thought Ketlin Vieta was more effective. I thought Misha wasn't moving her feet as well, and she was taking some shots and wearing the shots of Vieta, and I think that really was the difference at the end of the day. Ketlin Vieta showed improvements herself. I thought her fundamentals were a little bit more solid. She did a good job of stopping those takedowns. I thought if Misha was able to get on top, I thought it would have favored Misha for sure. She wasn't successful in that realm, and it was a close fight, but certainly had Ketlin Vieta winning that fight.
You had a great week, by the way. If bettors had put $100 on all of your selections, your only miss was on Misha, plus $527. You're making the listeners money over the last several weeks.
There we go.
But as far as Ketlin Vieta is concerned, and, you know, sometimes in lieu of an analytical mind like yours, I focus on things like, you know, commitment, right? Mm. And work ethic and focus, right? And sometimes you need the right opponent and the right of fight to bring you back to that place. And anyone who remembers when Ketlin Vieta was signed by the UFC knows that the promotion thought highly of her and thought that she could produce results like this. And I think when you get a main event against a returning motivated Miesha Tate, title eliminator of sorts insofar as one of you is eliminated and Miesha Tate was eliminated, I thought it brought the best out of Ketlin Vieta. She was focused. She made weight. And, man, she hits fucking hard, huh?
She hits hard. You know, she's definitely well built for that division. And, again, showed improvements. And I think you look at her fight against Irena Aldana, you know, the improvements that she's made since then and, you know, coming back from, you know, those – couple of losses, she showed that she is tough, she is determined, and she went against Miesha Tate, like you said. She went against a Miesha Tate that was highly motivated, that showed improvements. It wasn't enough, but I think Misha's on the right track. This is a Miesha Tate late in her career that is improving as a martial artist and as a fighter, and I expect more of those changes moving forward from her as well.
And of course, in less than 2 weeks, Juliana Pena in this division will challenge Amanda Nunes for one of her two titles, the UFC Women's Bantamweight Championship. And for those suggesting that the waters are pretty shallow thereafter, you know, Ketlin Vieta is a new challenger. A lot of people thought that maybe she would have gotten to the top of the heap sooner. But after this win over Miesha, remains to be seen how many cuts to 35 Nunes still has left. Remains to be seen if she even gets past Juliana Pena. But Ketlin Vieta is in the mix after a big win over Miesha Tate. Unless you have anything else on the main event, I'll move along to Sean Brady, who certainly passed the biggest test of his UFC career to date.
Yeah, and really impressive given the fact that he doesn't have a dozen fights in the UFC and he's facing a guy relatively early in his career in Michael Chiesa, who has been there and really done that, both at 55 and 170 pounds, and also being a tall, lanky grappler. This was going to be an interesting test for Sean Brady, and boy, did he pass the test. I thought that he showed superior grappling skills to that of Michael Chiesa. His entries into takedowns were phenomenal. They showed excellent timing there, was taking down Michael Chiesa, showing superior positioning there, landing some good strikes on the ground. Where I thought was left to be desired was on the striking aspect of Sean Brady's game. I expected a little bit more striking wise. I thought Michael Chiesa was winning a lot of those exchanges and hurting Brady there, but an undefeated Sean Brady here at 5-0 is extremely impressive. Again, only five fights into his career. On his fifth fight, he's fighting a true veteran, Michael Chiesa, and getting it done and doing it impressively. This kid is someone to watch at 170 pounds, no question about it.
Yeah, perfect UFC start, 5-0. I think 14 or 15-0 overall, but getting in a lot of valuable developmental time, not just in the gym in the Northeast, but obviously in the octagon against a guy as credentialed as Michael Chiesa. And Chiesa took to social media, said largely the goal remains unchanged. He's still focused on becoming the undisputed UFC welterweight champ, but he's obviously got a hill to climb, and it's a more steep grade now with back-to-back losses to Vicente Luque and now Sean Brady. Seemed like maybe Brady was dealing with a bloody nose early on. And I think in reading some of his quotes after the fact, he might have a procedure to try to sort of nip that in the bud. But he says sometimes even when he just gets touched with an open palm in training, things start to leak. So hopefully that won't be something that rears its ugly head throughout Sean Brady's career. He did call for potentially the winner of Bilal Muhammad and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. But regardless, wow. Big things for Sean Brady. He's getting a big fight. Just had a big fight. He's getting a big fight next.
Yeah, and how about that for confidence? You know, again, saying yes to a fight like Michael Chiesa in his own, in only his fifth fight in the UFC, now calling out, you know, the winner of Bilal Muhammad Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. It shows that he feels he is ready to make a run for the title already. So looking forward to seeing how that develops.
By the way, betting odds released over the weekend for Muhammad and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Did that cross your wake at all, Ken Flo?
Thompson, no.
Minus. No. Should I tell you? Should I make you guess? So my twin brother called me getting a text from our executive producer, Cody Merrow. He said, before you look at your phone, what do you think the opening line is on Stephen Wonderboy Thompson and our guy, Bilal Muhammad, who hosts a show on this channel every Thursday night? It's called Remember the Fucking Show without the F word. So I thought Bilal would be the underdog. I thought Wonderboy would be like minus 190. That was my guess. What do you think?
I think that's about right. I'd say, yeah, maybe 180-ish for Wonder Boy.
So he's minus 240. So Whoa. A little bit more pronounced. And Wow. when I pulled the masses, a lot of people sort of liked Wonder Boy at that number. The comeback on Bilal is minus or is plus 190, I should say. But I think these are pretty simple fights to handicap when it is Wonder Boy Thompson, right? I mean, is Muhammad going to be able to do a lot of what Gilbert Burns was able to do and make this his fight? Because again, standing and trading with this guy more often than not is a recipe for disaster. I thought that was interesting. That came out. And Sean Brady certainly factors prominently in that welterweight equation. Tyler Santos with a submission win over Joanne Wood, who is now 0-1 under the Wood banner after dropping the Calderwood. And then Adrian Yanez. I know you're a fan over Davy Grant. Yeah. Split decision, 29-28 times two for Yanez. And the other judge had it 30-27 for Davy Grant. This is obviously something you're looking to avoid when it comes to the scorecards. Michael Bisping had it 2-1 for Davy Grant. He was on the call, and that is not British bias. I think he is giving an objective scorecard there. I thought Yanez won the fight. It was a competitive fight. I like both guys. Your thoughts on Adrian Yanez back earlier this month?
Listen, I didn't think it was going to be easy to finish someone like Davy Grant. And he's a guy that just will survive and find a way to come back, and he's going to fight to the very end. However, I would disagree with our buddy Michael Bisping. I thought Yanez did win the fight. I think that when you have that kind of shoulder roll style, it looks like you're taking shots. A lot of those shots were really skimming off the top of the head or, you know, sliding off that deflecting shoulder of Adrian Yanez. So I don't think a lot of those shots were landing, to be honest. Davy Grant showed a lot of heart in that fight. But Yanez, I thought, was just really dominant with his striking. I thought it was even closer. I thought it was a 30-27 for Yanez, to be honest.
Right.
And I thought there was one of those rounds that were close. But, you know, I thought it was Yanez who was piecing up Davy Grant for the most part. And, you know, just leading the dance pretty much start to finish. So, and another impressive performance for Yanez, getting more experience, getting better. And he did it against a very tough Davy Grant.
It really is hard to judge this sport, to watch the striking closely. And I know for those of us who commentate the sport, it's even harder. I remember you saying to me, God, probably 10 years ago now, but how hard it is when both guys land simultaneously to not dip into one narrative, right? But you're right. I did think that Yanez was rolling pretty well with a lot of those shots. And I think sometimes beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and Grant throws a lot of himself into those shots. And you really have to watch closely as an observer. And I think sometimes as a fan, when there's a lot going on, drinking or whatever else, it's hard to really watch strikes. And certainly as a commentator, when you're talking to your producers, but as a fan like Ken Flo, I know you're watching this stuff pretty closely, and you saw what you saw. Rani Yahya. I mean, just go bet on Rani Yahya, right? The ageless Rani Yahya gets it done over Kyung Ho Kong, 29-28 times three.
Yeah, just again, another vintage Rani Yahya performance. And he found himself in some trouble there against the Korean fighter, who showed some serious toughness. But Yahya, just too good, man. You know exactly what he's going to do. He still finds a way to get you to the ground, whether he's on his back or not, knows how to turn the tables and take advantage, take that back. And surprised he wasn't able to get the finish from, you know, that back mount, but just dominant nonetheless. Superior positioning. Brazilian jiu-jitsu at its best right there.
All right. So after an off week for the combat sports leader, the UFC will be back at it. Three consecutive shows here in December, the 4th, the 11th, and the 18th. First up will be Rob Font and Jose Aldo. James Krause coming up shortly to make some predictions. Gotta love two guys on the main card who Ken Flo fought, you know? You got to love it. Clay Guida and Jose Aldo. More on that coming up later. But a couple other items I want to get to before we bring on Ray Longo. He's gotten progressively less polite with his text message replies when I write, "Hey, man, like, is 12:30 p.m. Eastern good?" And he'll be like, "Yes," you know, not like, "Yes, happy Thanksgiving, looking forward to it." Just yes. So we'll have to catch up with what I believe will be a curmudgeonly Ray Longo on a Monday morning. I mean, the Monday after Thanksgiving week is hard for a lot of people. But I want to get your thoughts on a few other items before we move on. So Islam Makhachev by virtue of the way he beat Dan Hooker and because he's won like 9 consecutive fights, a lot of people felt like maybe he was going to be a backup for the title fight between Charles Oliveira and Dustin Poirier, which is coming up on December 11th. Or a lot of people thought maybe he'd be next for the title. But it looks as though that distinction belongs to Justin Gaethje, who will await the winner of Oliveira and Poirier. And that means that Islam Makhachev will put his 9-fight winning streak on the line against the also streaking Beneil Dariush. And I guess my thesis statement is, at lightweight, it's never enough, right? Just ask Tony Ferguson how many wins you need at 55 to get a championship opportunity. So Makhachev's got a hugely hard fight now in front of him in February. And if he gets by this one, 10 in a row is going to earn him a title fight. Your thoughts on Makhachev and Dariush?
I think this is an awesome fight. I think that this is going to be a real test for both men. Dariush is, I guess you could argue, the highest level grappler that Makhachev has faced at this point in his career. So I'm really curious to see how that ground battle goes down. Does Dariush have the ground skills to nullify and perhaps, go on the attack against someone like Makhachev? I think both men are dangerous on the feet as well. I think Makhachev has some serious power. He's had some good fundamentals on his feet. Dariush has that I don't give a fuck type of stand up where he'll take, two or three to give one big bomb. He has shown his toughness, his chin, his durability in previous fights. I think he's got a ton of momentum and confidence behind him right now. He realizes how big this fight is for him. And I think all the pressure is on Makhachev. So I think Dariush is in a great position here. Awesome fight. And I think well placed there in a main event in February. Is that right?
Yes, I believe February 26th, and well set up by you. And that's why I wanted to get some of your thoughts on it. I believe they're both managed by Ali Abdelaziz, but again, a fight of that magnitude, probably pretty easy to get both sides to agree. I don't know if there's, title shot language, but that has to be something verbally that was presented to both sides. If you're Beneil Dariush, right? I mean, I think he's won 6 in a row. If you beat Islam, dude, you're fighting for the belt as well. Yeah, and what a story that would be, right? When you think about him getting into the UFC and essentially devotes 5 years of his life to jiu-jitsu, masters that craft in so many words, right? And then moves on to MMA and, had some ups and downs of now bona fide lightweight contender getting Islam Makhachev. It's absolutely incredible. I fucking love that fight. And I'll be sitting on my couch watching it like most of the rest of you. All right. To that end, UFC 269 is less than 2 weeks away. And we're going to spend most of next week's show on it, so I won't go too deep today. Charles Oliveira obviously broke through against Michael Chandler. He is the undisputed UFC lightweight champion. Dustin Poirier, this will be his third championship training camp of 2021. Now, granted, the first two were for non-title fights, right? But Dominic Cruz oftentimes has talked about 2016, and he had 3 25-minute fights. TJ Dillashaw in January, Uriah Faber in July, Cody Garbrandt in December. 3 championship training camps inside of 12 months proved to be too much. Just didn't have it against Garbrandt at the end of the year. And if I am voicing concerns for Dustin Poirier, that is chief among them. It's been a very busy year for Poirier. So busy that some, Chael Sonnen, I believe, and others. No, it wasn't Chael, but some questioned, I think it was Brett Okamoto, actually, whether or not this belt of Charles Oliveira's would even be on the line again in 2021 because Poirier needed some time off. But this belt was earned in May, and it'll be defended in December. And I think for Dustin, it's asking a lot of himself to perform at his peak for a third straight time this year.
I think it is a lot. However, I think that narrative is going to be different for each and every fighter, right? It's like Dominic Cruz has had some issues staying healthy throughout his career or a little bit later in his career. You look at a guy like a GSP and how often he defended the belt in certain years. And he was preparing for 3, sometimes 4 title fights. I don't know. I could be completely inaccurate on that. But, he did it often and stayed quite busy. And he was training all the time. The dude was a workhorse. I've never seen someone be able to take on that kind of training volume. However, I did see that wear on GSP over time. So it is something to watch for. And I'm curious to see how Dustin Poirier is able to handle that workload over the course of these last 12 months. These are big fights. Takes a lot out of you physically, mentally, spiritually. But Dustin Poirier, the diamond. They call him the diamond for a reason. This guy is as durable as they come. It seems like he still gets better, more confident with each and every fight. He's fighting Oliveira, I think, at the right time in his career. Aside from being so busy this year, I think as far as the skills that he's amassed, the experience that he's amassed at this point, big fight experience, he has more of that than Oliveira. Okay, so I think this is a fascinating matchup, but that could very well play a factor. And I don't know, what are the odds right now, John?
Dustin's favored, albeit slightly. Well, it depends where you look, but I think in the minus 160 range. And again, you bring up a lot of important differences between a fighter built like Dustin Poirier and a fighter built like Dominic Cruz. And again, it's not as though those Poirier-McGregor fights went very long, juxtaposed against Dominic Cruz's previous two fights against Dillashaw and Faber that both went 25 minutes. And the Dillashaw fight in particular was very physically taxing. So we'll see how it plays out. Poirier's the favorite right now. Charles Oliveira's been off since May, and it all goes down to T-Mobile Arena December 11th. Full picks from Ken Flo and Jimmy Krause coming up next Monday here on the Anakin Florian podcast. All right, Ray Longo coming up in about 60 seconds, but I got to tell you, Ken Flo, every time I get ready to go wheels up for a UFC live event, I get a little anxious about being on all these public Wi-Fis, credit card info, my personal data. Now my Bitcoin has to be protected as well. And thinking about this stuff being stolen gives me almost as much anxiety as showing up on fight week behind on my preparation. But thankfully, now I sleep like a baby because we got hooked up with NordVPN. I'm running their technology on all my stuff now so that I'm protected from hackers and scammers no matter where I go in the world. Not only am I protected, but sometimes the sites I use for my gambling advice are a little restricted in certain states or countries. Well, not when I'm using NordVPN. You're given full control of your location, so the internet is always open, safe, and accessible for you. And I know you Anakin Florian podcast listeners know what I'm talking about when it comes to internet privacy. So let us help you out. It is Cyber Monday today, and NordVPN is going to give you up to 73% off plus a free bonus gift when you go to nordvpn.com/AFPod or use the promo code AFPod when you sign up. Almost three-fourths of the price off a subscription, 73% or 30% better than Jose Aldo landed when he fought Ken Flo 10 years ago. 30-day money-back guarantee if NordVPN is not for you, so there is no risk. And, of course, you are helping the podcast as well so we can keep all of this content free forever. So head on over to nordvpn.com/AFPod for more information. That is nordvpn.com/AFPod. Or hit up our social channels and click through the links for that Cyber Monday deal of 73% off today. And keep your data safe. Some guy that does not have to worry about his data is Ray Longo. Can barely work a fucking computer. Let's get to Ray.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I'm going to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
What up, Ray?
Oh, man. The hell are we doing?
The star of the program. Oh, yeah. You are.
Hell yeah. I hope Krause is happy because I'm a mess. I hope Krause is happy.
So is
this fucking cameras suck, man.
Is the new time slot not working out for you?
No, it's actually better, I think.
All right. So 12:30 PM Eastern is better.
It's actually good. How are we feeling, guys? I feel like
we're feeling good. So you're just having fun with Krause, right? You're not really upset.
Oh no, 100%. Yeah. I love Krause. No,
happy Thanksgiving.
Great.
It's great to see.
Wait. First of all, I like everybody. When I'm busting balls, I'm busting.
No,
balls.
I know. I know.
I'm hoping it's funny to people, but
of course, 100%. Right. Like you and I love each other, but I think if people listen to the podcast, they might think at times that we don't.
No, I don't think they would ever think that.
Sometimes people take issue with as soon as you get off the air, I take a shot and you're not here to defend yourself. And you can be sure I'm going to do it again today.
But that's what I mean. I want you to do it.
Right. So
we're trying to deliver content, John.
Exactly.
I don't know that yet.
Free content. So how was your Thanksgiving in terms of content?
It was good. It was really good. I went to my sister-in-law's and I visited a friend, Joe Spinelli, bought a beautiful house over in Laurel Hollow. So we had a great time over there. And it was good. How about you guys?
Yeah, no, all good. Ken Flo, were you in Charlotte for Thanksgiving?
I was. My wife's family was here for Thanksgiving. Had a bunch of kids and dogs here at the house. It was a madhouse. And I ate like a complete pig. But here we are.
a bunch of dependent dogs and kids.
I'll tell you, that hair is in place though, buddy. I can't get my hair to stay down. I don't know what's happening.
You guys could probably talk off the air about some hair products and Kenny.
Yeah, really? I'll help you out, Ray. Yeah.
Thank you, Ken.
Hey, if you have any hair product people out there, you want to send it to Ray Longo. Yeah. It's worked every time. Anything I mention, I tell them to send it to Ray. They send it. So
wait, John, how did you avoid when I was in Florida? That's what I want to know.
Well, you were way south of me, and the timing was a little bit tricky, if memory serves, but you were about 45 minutes south of me. But I got your message the day after when you said lunch or dinner on me, because I don't pass up free meals,
John, you're pretty south. Where the hell, Ray, where were you? Cuba? 45 minutes.
Exactly, Kenny.
He's all the way in the tip. He's at the very end of Florida. I don't get it. How much more south could he be?
Yeah, he told me he was close to Lauderdale. That's where I was.
Yeah, it was about four. I'm in West Boca Raton. If you want, I can give out the address too. But I am I am 45 minutes north of Miami, maybe 30 minutes north of Fort Lauderdale. But no, I think I don't know. I went across the state for vacation. But anyway, what we really need to do is the three of us at some point get together in a non-podcast environment. I mean, we've never sat down and broken bread, the three of us, not one time.
This is true.
I'm living for that. But anyway, listen, before I even get going, I want to shout out to Dr. Tony Ricci and his friends over at the Fight Science Lab at Nova Southeastern. What a great facility they have. And Dr. Jose Antonio, Dr. Talvin Silva, Dr. Corey Peacock, they're doing a great job. And I'm one of those guys, I don't want too much analysis. It's like paralysis by analysis. Right. Tony's really, really entrenched in the fight game. I worked with him for years, and he really knows how to transfer and explain everything over. But you guys ever get a chance, John, you would love that facility. They could test everything possible over there. It's phenomenal.
I am overdue to connect with Tony, especially now that he's in South Florida. All right, a couple items with Raymond Longo today. I don't know if you had anything for us on the Ketlin Vieta Misha Tate main event that happened a couple of weeks ago. I think Misha was very accurate in terms of her own self-assessment, that she doesn't have to panic wrestle anymore, right? I mean, she certainly has developed her skills, and I do think she can make a run, but this was Ketlin Vieta's night. I don't know if you had anything for us on that.
I thought, there's people that take time off and they come back and they're a little older and they don't look that good. I thought Misha looked good. She just ran into like a bigger, stronger person.
Right.
Who's, on the way up. But I thought Misha had a great account of herself. I really did. And I agree with her assessment. It didn't look like she was going to panic shoot or she was in a rush to get anywhere. But, I think the moment that killed me the most was after the fight when Ketlin Vieta was just crying, because I really believe she probably idolized her growing up. And that's a really bad thing when you beat the crap out of your idol. You know what I mean? You don't want to do it, but it's part of the game. That last piece when she was crying, telling Misha Tate, I'm sorry, that got to me, man. And I get it. I get it. I think we see it a lot in sports where, the guys, up and coming guys who they idolize, even in boxing, whatever it is, and then they have to go in and, the person they idolize is kind of on the way out and they have to, do what they have to do. That's what I saw. But I thought Misha did a great job. I think she's, I don't know. I like what I saw. Is it enough to get it to the championship? Look, she could always submit anybody. So she's got that going. And if she could stay healthy, I mean, look, things change when you have a kid. And, she did get pretty lumped up. Sometimes, your priorities are different. I talk to these guys as they're getting older, their health becomes their first priority.
Yeah.
And these are guys that are tough motherfuckers coming up, man. And they just say, enough is enough. It's been 15 years, 16 years, whatever it's been, they got to just move on with their life. But I thought she had a great account of herself, and hats off to Ketlin Vieta. I thought she was just classy as you could be in a victory.
And I do think, generally speaking, and I've said it repeatedly, if you are a combat sports athlete and you can wait to have children until either late in your career or it's over, cannot recommend that enough. I know, Kenny, obviously you did not have kids while you were fighting, and you and I, Kenny, both waited until we were a little bit older to have kids. But like, I sit here right now on a Monday, I'm going to Vegas to call Rob Font and Jose Aldo. And if I had zero kids, the whole fucking show would be prepared already. You know what I mean? So never mind if I'm an athlete trying to get in sleep and three a days and everything else. And, you know, I know Misha is finding a good balancing act. And again, she's the one pushing out the babies, which no male fighter can lay claim to. I'm just saying, it's really hard to balance all of those things, no matter your career, but especially as a fighter, Kemp.
It's only hard if you want to be a good parent.
Yeah.
If you don't want to be a good parent, it's fine. It's not a problem.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, I'm going to go another step. Obviously, I've been there. But Kenny's right, man. I tell you, that's the he's 100% right. I'll go another route. I was lucky enough to have a great wife that really did everything. So when I was traveling, and I was traveling a lot, I always felt great. I always tried to make it up. And I don't even know if I did a good job. I think I tried to. I 100% was aware of it, cognizant, and I tried. But Kenny's right, though. If you really want to be a good parent, man, you got to be present. That's just the bottom line. I think there's other ways around it. But I think that's where Matt's at in his life now, man. He just wants to spend time with his kids, man. That's part of the whole thing. And, you know, there's things that exist outside of fighting, right, and calling the fights and everything else. But you get one shot at doing that family thing right, and you better think about it, because it's definitely not easy.
And I think for some of us, fathers and mothers, it's self-inflicted guilt, right? Like, my wife has never given me shit for not changing a diaper, no pun intended. But I put guilt on myself when I'm not meeting her halfway. Like, my best friend, who coined the phrase "yo later," Brian Montgomery, love him, right? Never changed a diaper in his life. Like, he's an average father. He's a pretty good father, you know? If he listens to this, he's going to kill me, right? But like, he coaches the hockey teams. He's a doting dad, but omnipresent wouldn't be the first adjective that I would use. And when he goes off to Maine for a weekend, he does so free of guilt. He's not putting any guilt on himself. And I know for me and Kenny, and I'm sort of putting this on him a little bit, but I know for us, when we're away, you know, we come back, we feel this great need to contribute and perhaps overcompensate for the time we've missed, you know?
Exactly. So. And just to your point, John, I never changed the diaper either. The first
not one in your life.
Maybe one.
Isn't that?
I don't know.
So it's a little bit of a generational thing, though, I think, Kenny, right? Because
true. Absolutely.
Yeah. The first time my wife left me with the kids, I called my one friend who had kids, Chris the senior. Say, dude, you want to go hang out? He came over. I made him change the diapers. I swear, I'm not even joking around.
Yeah.
I was so happy to come over. I said, you know how to change a diaper? Because this ain't my thing, man.
Yeah. No, I mean, when they're tiny little alien babies, that is the worst thing. But it is funny, right? Because I do think if you talk to a lot of men born in the 50s and 60s, they didn't change a lot of diapers. If you talk to men born in the 70s, 80s, and 90s who have become parents, I think a lot of those guys change diapers. I think it has changed a lot. I think the traditional gender roles have gone by the boards. No, you're smirking at me, Longo.
Things are changing in this world, John.
Chivalry is dead or no, Ray? I don't know.
You guys are giving in. Can you hold to your ground? Don't change a diaper.
You know what else
never happened? You were never in the delivery room either. They have to torture you with that now.
Right.
You know what I mean? You never want to look at that thing when a baby's coming out. You'll never be the same, John.
Yeah.
You got to keep that picture of that vajayjay just really tight in your mind.
Okay.
I don't want to see a head popping out.
That's funny.
Can't unsee it.
Yeah.
Generational weak-minded men trying to stay hard out here changing that.
What about the delivery room when you get that girl that's cursing out her husband? You motherfucker! I swear to God, I was
not even your baby, probably. Right?
Oh yeah, I was like, I remember looking at my wife and going, "Listen, you try that in there, I'm killing everybody in the room." I'm telling you, this guy was getting slaughtered, John. Slaughtered.
Oh man,
like, what? You know, I'm on no sleep, so it's even worse.
Yeah. Well, this is not what I had earmarked for the Ray Longo minute today, but a couple of things I did want to talk about. Justin Montalvo.
Oh, fight this week's fight.
Yeah. Right. I did my homework. I did my research. You've dropped his name 23 times in the history of the podcast. So really? I figured we would give him a shout out. He's fighting this weekend. Is that right?
That's right. Bellator.
Bellator, did you say?
Bellator.
Bellator. Okay. So he's got a fight this weekend. What can you tell us about that?
Man, he's always ready to fight. He's always in the gym. He's 3-0. I think he's 3-0 with 3 knockouts, 3 finishes. Great hands, great takedown defense. He's looking good. Really good.
I feel like you started talking about him on these airwaves when he was an amateur. So I did want to give Justin a little shout out there.
And he's been in the gym since he's 15, right? He's one of those guys. So everybody's pulling for him. He's a great kid, great dad. Dad'll do anything for him. Ernie Montalvo, shout out to him, because I tell you, without him, that kid's, we don't know where he is. Wow. But everything's going good now, so I'm stoked. I'm leaving Wednesday night, and really happy for this guy.
Where are the fights?
Connecticut.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Last order of business, and then time permitting, we'll get a prediction from you on Rob Font and Jose Aldo coming up this weekend. So Ally Quinta has seemingly retired from mixed martial arts, or at least has hinted as much publicly. I apologize for not crediting the interview. Did you get a chance to digest any of Ally Quinta's comments about his fighting future?
Yeah, no, I've talked to Al, man. I think he's had enough, man. I think he was scheduled for ACL surgery December 2nd, but he's going to go to Columbia to try the stem cells, you know, before. But he's just banged up, man. And it's I think it just finally caught up to him, even mentally, you know, because you could be banged up but mentally still be in there. I said this is the first time he's pretty banged up mentally. I love the guy. The guy will always be a warrior, but I don't think that fight was indicative of anything we've seen of Ally Quinta in the last 15 years.
Right. Is that something that you saw coming a little bit, maybe leading up to that fight or in that camp, where you said, hey, Al's not putting forth maybe the same kind of effort, or his energy is off? Was that something that you saw a little bit?
Yeah, well, he couldn't, you know, and we came to the agreement, like, listen, let's try to get to the fight healthy. You know how to fight. You know what I mean? Do what you have to do. But there were days where he'd have to take 2 or 3 days off, which in a fight camp is an eternity. But then he would feel good, and I would feel happy about that. And, you know, it is what it is. I honestly, he's been pretty open with it, but I don't really want to take one iota away from Bobby Green. Think the guy's a fucking great fighter and a great person. I really like Bobby a lot. So, I mean, I think I don't want this talk to diminish what he did either. Because
of course,
if Bobby Green wasn't good, I would have, you know, Bobby Green was part of the problem. He's very good.
Right.
And he was very accurate and fast.
And you're right. This fight was the outlier in Ally Quinta's career.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And if you're talking about his legacy, right, I would just point to three things, okay? The Ultimate Fighter Live came off the Ultimate Fighter Live in 2012. Obviously, that was the one season that I worked, so I feel a special bond to those athletes. Ally Quinta could not even walk to the octagon barely when he fought Michael Chiesa in that final fight. It was at the end of 13 weeks. I give him a lot of credit for even fighting that night. Yeah. The Jorge Masvidal win in Virginia, when he said to the crowd, are you guys booing me? Fuck you, right? I mean, probably the greatest classic, or one of the top three post-fight interviews that I've ever been involved with. And then, of course, fighting Khabib Nurmagomedov for 25 minutes on 24 hours notice, right? And putting a pretty good showing of himself forward that night. So I'll always think of those three things with Ally Quinta. He's a lost man. He's a character. Yeah. There's no doubt.
Yeah. And I think those three things definitely define him for various reasons. But how long ago was that Ultimate Fighter show?
2012.
Yeah. So 2012, and he couldn't walk. So really things didn't get a lot better even after that. And he had a great career, but he had to struggle through a lot of shit. He's a tough motherfucker. And I'd watch that guy rehab every day, like doing the same shit.
Yeah.
I think if I was as diligent with my rehab, I'd be walking perfect. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he just put the time in just on rehab alone. You know, watched him with the bands every day, and then was always going once or twice a week to Staten Island to The Fight Science Lab. No, that's not whatever the place in Staten. Holy crumb. I'm drawing a blank. And a guy who owns this, great guy. I can't even think.
Hopefully he doesn't listen to the show, but
he probably does. Man, I gotta start. I gotta get on that alpha brain as quick as possible.
You need to start smoking weed. You don't understand.
No, that's what happened. I think I started smoking weed. I can't remember a thing. Are you kidding? That made it worse. I have to stop.
Hey, before I let you go, I'm really excited to get back to work this weekend.
Yeah.
And it's Rob Font and Jose Aldo. And, you know, this is a special fight. Obviously, we got a Massachusetts kid on one side trying to potentially secure his first UFC title shot. And then the king of Rio de Janeiro, Jose Aldo, who is probably the most respected fighter by his fellow fighters on the roster right now. Font is a slight favorite, minus 150. Ray, what do you have for us on the main event in the division in which you train and coach the champion?
That's a five rounder?
Five rounds, if needed.
Yeah, I think that's the benefit to Font is that I think in a three round fight, Jose Aldo has been looking phenomenal. You know what I mean? But he's got another two rounds to finish. I'm going to go with Font. He's got great boxing. I think Jose Aldo also has great boxing. It's going to be a great fight. I just hope that Font, it's almost like the Misha Tate, Caitlin Vieira. I'm sure he idolized Jose Aldo. Now he's got to face this guy. He's still good. He's going to have to put all that stuff past him and just go in what he does best, which is, you know, put on a boxing clinic against a guy that could box. So that's going to be a great fight. I think the five rounds favors Font. I'm going to go with Font in this fight.
Look at Longo ready to go on a Monday. And you're absolutely right. There is a comparison to be drawn between the Vieira Tate thing.
Yeah, those things
I don't know if Font put Aldo on that pedestal per se. But yeah, I mean, this is the fight. This is the guy, the famous guy you got to get past if you're going to become a world champion. So, yeah, all right. So, and that I Quinta podcast, call me Al if you do want to listen and follow I Quinta's exploits after fighting. Anything else before we let you fly? You do need some fucking pomade on that lettuce.
Oh, man. I could put anything in here. It just sucks it right up. Kenny, help me.
Some Valvoline or something up
what
there,
do I
right?
Do? So I must be taking something that's making my hair grow like I just got a cut last week. I just crazy. But wait, I want to give a shout out to Anthony DeLemme. He won a local title at Bobby Campbell's Jackhammer Promotions. They do a great job, him and Josh. They have a great little venue over at Mulcahy's. We also had Mike Curio. He looks like the next Cain Velasquez to me. It's his first fight. He came through submission first round. Zach. I think Zach Lowe is his name, trained by the Manimal in here. He did great. And who am I missing? Oh, Johnny.
Of course. I mean, you're going to forget Johnny?
Yeah, Johnny Salomon. He had a three-round decision. So we went 4-0, which was great. It was a Sunday night. What was that?
I said, how about that? No, that's great.
Yeah. And that's it. That's my plugs for the day. What else we got, man?
No, Kenny, well, it's great to see you. No, I mean, Kenflo got his blue Porsche fixed up all nice. It's driving
beautiful.
Do you have a Porsche?
I do. Yeah, an older one, 1990.
I got to tell you, I haven't seen those cars in a while. That was the shit back in the day, man.
Yeah.
I love those Porsches.
Yeah, thank you.
Remember the Porsche Carreras, the glasses?
Exactly. Sunglasses? Oh, that's the big one? Absolutely.
Kenflo can talk cars. He's not going to indulge you and me in this conversation. You can be sure. Hey, go get some pomade. Next week's a big week. Obviously, a big pay-per-view week. So we will talk to you next Monday. But it's great to see you, brother. Happy Thanksgiving. And, you know, I got more Christmas spirit than probably any Jew on the planet. So I'm excited that the holiday season is here.
We're all God's people under the sun, buddy. Right. Don't break it down to Jewish, Catholic. You're making a mistake.
No, I'm just saying I didn't grow up with like Christmas trees and everything. So I married a Polish Catholic woman. And now it's like my kids have to listen to Christmas carols from November 15th on. And that's just the
what is the a great holiday, there. Though, John? Isn't it a great holiday? Enjoy
it's
it.
It's the best.
They'll probably cancel it next year. So enjoy it this year. Right. Seriously, get as most out of it. That's what I'm doing. I'm going crazy this Christmas.
I love it.
Next year. Who knows what we'll be celebrating.
I will say, though, right, and I know you got to go, but those people who criticize other people for like listening to holiday music like too early, as if you don't have anything better to do in your life than complain about when somebody chooses to start listening to that music, right? Like once SiriusXM puts that holiday channel 105, like I'm in. And if they do it on November 20th, great. But imagine being, you know, such a low rider, such a bottom feeder, right? That you be like, why are they listening to holiday music in November? It's like, why do you give a shit? No, I don't.
Just be happy. Can't we all just be happy?
Hey. Right. Yeah, we can all be happy. Hey, we'll talk to you next Monday, huh? Great day, Petter.
Ray, Ray.
I'll talk to you. Take care.
There he is, Ray Longo Minute, every Monday here on the Anakin Florian Podcast. Maybe not the best minute in the history. But next time Aya Quince is not training for a fight, maybe tell us, Ray, so we can bet on Bobby Green. You know, totally kidding. Love both of those guys. Quickly want to get to the pronunciation of the week, and then we'll get to the great James Krause. So this fighter, as we welcome on Cody Merrow, it's good to see you, kid. What's up, Bone?
What's up, Bone? How you doing?
Good.
To the moon, baby. Let's go. Buy the dip.
Let's go. Yes. Look at that hat.
Bitcoin hat. Is that what that is?
I've had this hat before. I had this hat when Bitcoin was like $1,000. Should have bought Bitcoin instead of his hat.
Yeah.
Moving on to the pronunciation of the
rocket
week.
Emoji hat. All right. So this fighter, right, once walked out to Baby Shark. He was to fight Matt Brown this weekend, but Matt Brown got COVID-19 and is not competing. So as of now, this man doesn't have an opponent, but he does have a surname that is mispronounced by a lot of people. So Cody Merrow, of whom are we speaking?
That is Brian Barberina.
Brian Barberina. All right, let's hear
Brian Barberina. Brian Barberina.
Twice slow.
Brian Barberina.
Yeah.
Brian Barberina.
Not all athletes are as good a sport as Brian Barberina. Ken Flo, sometimes when we have the athletes, and that's a win, Cody, excellent job. When Barberina. We have the athletes slow down Colombian, their actually. Names. Sometimes it can make the process more confusing. I've talked at length about this with MMA junkies John Morgan, but in this instance, when he slows it down, you clearly hear it is Barberina and not Barberina, as he has been called for much of his UFC career. So
right, and I like that they're not going to do the breakdown. It'd be like if I am Kenny Florian, Kenny Florian. It's totally different. Yeah.
Yeah. Your name can really and like DC, right? We call him Cormier, but if you listen to his file, it's like Cormier. Yikes. All right. We got a big show coming up this weekend. Fans are excited, obviously, after UFC was dark last Saturday. It is UFC Fight Night, Font versus Aldo. Let's get to the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. And
the time is most definitely now.
Florian. The main event challenge, the John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
Oh,
there he is.
Main event challenge backed by popular demand at the James Krause on social media. UFC.
Let's go. Bet,
coach to the stars, James Krause. Great to see you, brother. How are you?
I'm good, man. Just getting off the mats. Just got beat up for 25 minutes straight. And right, you know, that's how it goes sometimes. So
pro practice is in the can, and now we're going to get this Anakin Florian podcast in the can. Quick update on how you guys did. Again, ever since Krause joined the show, you've both been in the black every single week. So Kenny did win the week, albeit slightly. James Krause, you were above 500 as well, plus $260. You missed on Chiesa and Misha Tate, but you did say you would pass on betting Michael Chiesa, so shouldn't really dock you there. But a good week for both of you nonetheless, and we'll begin our selections for this weekend. Middleweight, Brendan Allen, minus 365. The favorite here as he looks to move to 6-1 in the UFC against Chris Curtis. Chris Curtis, James, plus 280, making the quick turn after that big knockout of Phil Hawes earlier this month. How do you see this one playing out, brother?
I got to tell you guys, I'm a big Brendan Allen fan, and I feel like his last fight against Soriano Puna was his coming out party. You know, like I thought that fight was going to give him some big problems. I really did. And I'm a fan of both of those guys. And I'll be honest with you. I thought that fight was going to give Brendan some problems. And man, I was wrong. He looked incredible. You know, I know a couple people were like questioning his chin after the Strickland fight. And man, he took some big shots from Puna, really answered all the questions that we had about him, in my opinion. Right. And, I have to lean Brendan Allen on this. Like I think he's gonna finish here. I could see a submission. It depends on what he decides to do. If he strikes, I could definitely see it going the distance. But if Allen decides to grapple, I think he'll finish Curtis on the ground. But you know, obviously Curtis has got some power, but I think Brendan's overall game, I think he's better on the ground. He's better striking. I think he's got a more complete game, more ways to win the fight. And the only way I see Curtis winning is if he knocks him out. Allen showed his durability in the last fight. I just don't see it happening. His volume's a little too low for me. I really like Brendan Allen in this fight a lot.
I think you set it up well. I have a lot of similar thoughts when it comes to Brendan Allen and that matchup with Puna, obviously, because a lot of us here on this show think highly of Puna Hele Soriano. Brendan Allen, Kenny, I don't know if he's number 17 in the world, but he's certainly on the cusp of the top 15. He's not ranked right now. How do you see him handling this Chris Curtis challenge this weekend?
Yeah, listen, I think Chris Curtis showed that he can be dangerous. Obviously, hits very hard, but I agree with a lot of what James said. I think it was pretty spot on with everything. I think that Chris doesn't throw enough. He doesn't put together consistent combinations to be that much of a threat from what we've seen anyway. Brendan Allen, you look at his last fight, the way he put it all together, this is a guy who's now really feeling himself. He understands his weapons. He knows what to use, when to use it. It's all coming together at the right time. And I think that potential that we saw early on is now kind of being realized here. Brendan Allen should win that fight.
And he's even learned in some wins against Kyle Daukaus, maybe got tested more than he thought he would that night. So a lot of people here bullish on Brendan Allen. We'll see how it goes for him against Chris Curtis. All right. Also on the main card, a bout that got a two-month delay, initially scheduled for October 2nd, 14 versus 13 in the light heavyweight division. Jimmy Crute minus 180 and Jamal Hill plus 155. So James, Crute is back for the first time since that foot drop incident against Anthony Smith at UFC 261 in April. Still just 25 years old, and obviously has shown a lot of promise. He's favored here against Jamal Hill.
Listen, I like Jimmy Crute a lot. There's a couple things that scare me in this matchup. I feel like as the fight progresses, I like Crute more and more. But, dude, Jamal Hill is an animal for a round and a half. And I'm not saying he's bad after that, but, like, his best work is done inside the first 5 minutes, in my opinion. And if Crute fights a smart fight, I think he's gonna take this fight to the ground. And if I'm Jimmy Crute or if I'm Jimmy Crute's coach, I say, hey, listen, let's go out. Let's get a hold of his body, put him on the fence in round one, really settle him into the fight. And take that open mat explosive striking away a little bit. Just take the danger factor down, right? Because as the fight plays out, the danger factor will get less and less on the Jamal Hill side to where Crute is by far the superior grappler, superior wrestler. But at range, Hill can knock anybody out, you know? So I have to lean Jimmy Crute. I think he's got more ways to win this fight. Sometimes his volume is a little low for my liking. And sometimes I don't want to say he doesn't fight smart, but sometimes it takes him a minute to kick in. Like, he has to get hit first sometimes. I don't like that in this fight. I don't like that at all. I am going to take Jimmy Crute in this fight. I think he is going to get it done. I think he's going to fight smart. And I don't know if I see this one going the distance or not. I could see a knockout by Hill in round one or submission by Crute in the later rounds. But I am going to take Jimmy Crute in this fight.
All right, James Krause likes Jimmy Crute. Jamal Hill, Ken Flo, 30 years old, has also shown a lot of promise in his own right and showed a lot of toughness in not tapping out against Paul Craig. Some valuable experience gained that night as well. Your thoughts on Hill and Crute here, big fight at 205.
Listen, another great breakdown by James. I think that, you know, for Jamal, he's going to be very dangerous on the feet and he's going to be very dangerous early on. You know, his length, his ability to put together good combinations, sharp strikes, accurate strikes might be a problem for Jimmy, who sometimes makes it a tough man battle out there at times. Anyway, earlier in his career, we saw that. So he's got to be careful just getting into trading battles with someone like Hill. Otherwise, it could be over quickly. Jimmy is a sharp striker himself, but he has to make sure that he's staying defensively sound himself throughout those exchanges. But like James said, the easiest path to victory here is via the takedown. Get Jamal to the ground where he can, you know, land some ground and pound from superior positioning and possibly lock up a submission. You know, that's where we saw Hill falter in his last fight, even though he was on top. Craig, of course, phenomenal from his guard, was attacking nonstop. But I think that Jimmy, if he does get on top, get him to the mat, he'll have a much better advantage throughout the fight if he's able to do that consistently round after round. So I like Jimmy Crute here as well.
All right, big fight. Excited to call it. Next one also fairly large at lightweight, 41-year-old Leonardo Santos, competing for the second time in a calendar year, for the first time since 2015. James, you know this guy well. Obviously, he was knocked out by your guy Grant Dawson in March, and remarkably, that was his first UFC loss. Here, he's a minus 195 favorite against the still not yet 40 Clay Guida. What do you think, James? Who wins, Guida or Santos?
I got to be honest with you. This one scares me a little bit. I mean, all the indicators would point to Santos winning this fight, right? Like, his takedown defense is extremely underrated and still really good. You know, his takedown defense, if Dawson can't get you down, you know what I mean? Like, Grant got him down It took him, I think, 12 and a half minutes or whatever to get him down. Man, Dawson can wrestle. And I know it's a little different, but I could see Guida just like outworking him, out-voluming him. And I do think Santos is going to win this fight, but he's getting older. His volume is starting to drop a little bit. His cardio isn't once what it was. I don't see Guida getting him down, but I could just see, like, you know how you have that little and I don't mean any disrespect to Clay. It's just the analogy that came up to me, that, you know, the little chihuahua that's like, arf! This in and out. Like, I could see Clay, you know, he's won fights doing that before. And I love Clay, by the way. Like, it's not any disrespect to him.
Of course.
I could see him in and out, takedown, back up, just outworking Santos. I could see that happening. I like Santos's power. I like his takedown defense. I like his submission danger. I don't like his volume. I don't like the age, even though I'm sure they're probably similar. Clay does not fight like he's his age. I'm gonna lean Santos, but I don't feel great about it. You know what I mean? Like, no. I'm not, like, I could see Guida, you know, just picking at him and scoring points and doing what Clay does, you know, but I am gonna take Santos here.
The question is, will I be dropping your chihuahua analogy on live television?
Please don't.
He's got to be ready. BloodyElbow.com is going to be like, James Krause calls Clay Guida an old chihuahua. Yeah, are you ready for that? Are you ready for that title, James?
Nah, Clay knows better. Clay knows better. I'll text him and tell him, mother, I love Clay. And he's beaten so many people like that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I didn't mean it in a obviously, no, you guys know course. This, but dude, how many people has he done that to, though?
I think it's a perfect analogy, and that's why I'm probably going to have no choice but to use it on the air. I think it's
all right.
Fair.
You got it. It's your take.
And we have so much love for Clay Guida on this broadcast, despite the fact that he is immortalized getting choked nearly unconscious.
Oh, gosh.
Right behind him. All right. Little history on this fight, because it's interesting for me and Ken Flo. We called Santos's UFC debut together in Fortaleza in 2013. You got the history with Clay Guida. You fought him in 2009. It was UFC 107. Absolutely destroyed him. As, of course, is immortalized on the wall behind you. But Guida's fought 21 times in the UFC since you fought him. 32nd UFC appearance for Clay Guida, who turns 40 4 days after the fight. How do you handicap his chances here against Leonardo Santos, Ken Flo?
Yeah, this is a tough one to break down, James. I agree. You know, Leonardo Santos was like one of the guys that I really looked up to in the jiu-jitsu world for a long time, was one of the guys who brought a lot of popularity to the butterfly guard back in the day, just one of the Nobu Uniao black belt legends for sure. And now has had success here in the UFC as well and made great strides with his striking, since we called his debut. And Clay is an absolute savage and a guy who, if you're not able to get his rhythm, he's going to give you a problem, man. He moves weird. He's unorthodox. He'll hit you from weird angles. You know, he'll keep you guessing with his takedowns and things like that. And his work rate, his durability is second to none. So this is a very difficult fight. Leonardo Santos, we see him fade sometimes. He can go from landing the sickest combinations and having the best round to looking lost in the next round and kind of out of it and not focused. So, he's going to have to be extremely focused, because what we do know is that Clay Guida is going to be in his face for every second of every round. And you know what? I kind of like the underdog here. I think Leonardo Santos probably has more ways to win. However, I think Clay Guida is the more consistent guy. And I'm going to go with Clay here for the upset.
Just like a little fucking chihuahua, right? Barking in your face all night. You just can't exactly. get away. Right?
Exactly. Unbelievable. And I thought he won that last fight against Mark Madsen. I thought it was real close, but I'm being honest, I thought he beat Madsen. So, you know, he's had some tough decisions go the other way.
Yeah. All right. Co-main event. What a matchup it is at lightweight. Rafael Fiziev, minus 120. Brad Riddell is the even money underdog. We'll take the round and the method of victory, fellas, if you do have it. So Fiziev has won four in a row since he got knocked out in his UFC debut by Magomed Mustafayev. Last win certainly tested against Bobby Green. That was UFC 265 in August, and he is a slight favorite here against the man, Brad Riddell. James Krause, who do you have?
This is another tough one. I will say this. The play that I like here is the over. I love the over here. Both these guys are extremely durable. What I see happening is I think Fiziev is going to win a very close decision. For me, the play is going to be is the over, though. And I don't see Fiziev finishing Riddell. I could potentially see Riddell finishing Fiziev by knockout. But Riddell has just shown, oh, my goodness, like, how durable is this guy? Like, I mean, he's just extremely durable. I do think Fiziev is the cleaner, better kickboxer, though. And I don't think he's going to get knocked out here. But for me, the play is the over on this one. Then maybe sprinkle Fiziev by decision. And if you guys are feeling froggy, Riddell by knockout, a little play there too, you know? But I'm going to go with Fiziev by decision. I think it's a close fight, but for me, the play is the over or even the fight goes the distance. If the odds should be better on that.
Right. And again, a lot of those propositions, round props are out now. They will all be out later in the week of that, I can assure you.
And that would be one of my biggest plays of the week. I don't know the odds yet. So the props usually come out a couple of days before the fights, but at face value, the over in that fight, I got to think that it's going to be low because they're both heavy hitters, right? Like, so I got to think it's going to be fairly low, good odds for us. But I really like the over in that fight. Not only do I like the over, I like it to go the distance.
All right, no total yet as of this taping, but that will be updated on our social channels later in the week. Kenny, Brad Riddell has had to deal with a lot, as has been the case for a lot of our athletes based in Australia and New Zealand. He's been displaced from his child extensively, right? Dan Hooker has gotten a lot of that shine, but Riddell and others have had to deal with hell. You know, he's had fights go away at the last minute, right? The Gregor Gillespie fight, but yet still is performing. He's 4-0 in the UFC and ranked now after dominating Drew Dober. That was UFC 263 back in June. Your thoughts on Riddell here in a huge spot against Rafael Fiziev?
Yeah, and lost a teammate, as did all those guys over at City Kickboxing. So, yeah, he is in a tough spot, and I think that's something to consider. Something else to consider, however, is the fact that Brad Riddell was the Muay Thai coach for Rafael Fiziev, apparently, at one point. They trained a lot in Thailand. I wonder if there's a big brother type equation there where, you know, if you're fighting a coach or a guy who has been a mentor, where you could be kind of playing second fiddle out there. So I wonder if that's going to be a factor. I think that both men are phenomenal strikers. And because it's so close here, not that I gain any extra points necessarily, I don't think, but I kind of like the underdog here. I like Riddell. I think Fiziev is a big time problem, but so is Riddell. He's as durable as they come. I don't think grappling is going to be, thrown into the equation here. These guys are standing on their feet and going to see who the better striker is. I could see it going either way, but, I'm just going to lean with the underdog here, just because of the odds.
Riddell by decision, Ken Flo?
Yes, sir.
All right, main event. I don't pre-screen these, so I have no idea on which side these fellas fall. Rob Font, minus 150. Jose Aldo, plus 130. So Aldo gets the blue corner here based upon ranking, but of course, in most equations, he is the A side. Not favored here, though, James. Rob Font gets that distinction, having won his last four, and all of them quality wins, right? Sergio Pettis, Ricky Simone, Marlon Moraes, and then Cody Garbrandt in a five-round main event May 22nd that served to set up this one. Font the favorite, Aldo the dog. James Krause, on which side do you fall, brother?
Oh, another tough one. If this was three rounds, I would go Aldo. But because it's five, I'm gonna go Font.
That's what Longo said. Yeah, interesting.
I'm gonna go Font. This is a tough one, man. I don't feel like the odds are right on this one. I really don't. Man, Aldo, golly, man, he's just like, look at who's. There's not a lot of guys that have beat him. You know what I mean? Like, he's getting beat by some of the elite of the division. You know, and it's just. It's really tough to bet against a guy like him. But Font, to me, I've been on the Rob Font bandwagon for years before anybody knew who he was. Him and I fought on the same card together. He fought Douglas de Silva or Silva de Andrade.
Yep.
The same night I fought Tom Glicchio. And I've been watching him since before that. I've held pads for him before. I've been on the Rob Font bandwagon. I'm not getting off right now. I do think this fight is a little bit closer on the odds than what's shown.
Right.
I'm gonna go Font by decision.
Font by decision. Yeah, I mean, I thought it would be a pick'em fight. Rob Font is -150, so a little bit more pronounced than I forecasted. Rob Font is 34, Jose Aldo 35. By the way, Kenny fought Jose Aldo when he was 25 years of age. Still very dangerous, and Kenny. In some ways, he's better, right? Like, in some ways, Aldo is better than he was.
Why are you bringing up old stuff, John?
I know. And I just have to say, for Rob Font, right? Born in Leominster, Massachusetts, fights out of fucking Woburn, Mass.
Woburn?
New England cartel. Huge spot in the main event here against Jose Aldo, as beloved as anybody on the roster. Ken Flo, Aldo, Font, men on the marquee. Who wins the main event and how?
This is a tough one. Rob Font, first of all, doing a great job of putting New England, putting Massachusetts on the map. You look at his last four fights. I mean, look at the guys that he's beaten. Sergio Pettis, who's now, you know, the world champ over in Bellator. Ricky Simone, Marlon Moraes, Cody Garbrandt, all savages. You know, and you look at the improvements he's made technically, you know, mentally, you know, conditioning wise, he's firing in all cylinders, and he's going to be extremely difficult to beat. However, he is fighting a guy in Jose Aldo who is showing that he is still getting better and he still has a ton of tricks up his sleeves. Now, if you look at the guys that have beaten him, you know, Piotr Jan, Marlon Moraes, I thought Aldo won that fight. Volkanovski, you know, these are all, you know, championship level or champions in the respective divisions who are doing this. So, you know, Rob Font is certainly on that or on the path to becoming that. Is he there yet? I don't know. I think we'll find out. If he's able to beat someone like Jose Aldo, then watch the hell out. I don't know. I think Aldo still has enough up his sleeve to win a decision here. And we also can't forget Jose Aldo is a high-level Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. He may put Font on his back and try to take the fight to the ground and look for superior positioning and look for a submission. We saw him take that path against Chito Vera. So he may do the same and mix things up and keep Font guessing. I don't think that would be a terrible strategy here. I think we kind of forget about Jose and his grappling skills. He's so good on the feet that we forget that he comes from you know, one of the best Brazilian jiu-jitsu camps in the world in Nobu Niao. So I like Aldo here. Can he get the submission? Yes, but I think it's going to come down to a decision. Jose Aldo does enough to get the win, but he has to watch out. Just like, you know, James was saying and Ray was saying, you got to watch out in that fourth and fifth round. That's where Rob Font may be saving it a little bit and start to turn it on, where we've seen Jose Aldo start to lose it. So Jose has to recognize that at this point. I would think he's got to be prepared for that strategy and to be ready for that onslaught late in the fight. I think he will be and be able to survive. I like Jose here in this fight to win by decision.
I can't tell you how enjoyable it is for me to hear you two fellas go back and forth. Hopefully the listeners feel the same way. At the James Krause on social media, if you want more. Are you on the road this weekend? Where are you headed?
Nope. Home.
Wow.
Home sweet home, baby.
There we go.
Well, enjoy the great state of Missouri. Or are you in Kansas? I always get confused.
Nobody's on the Kansas City, Kansas side, bro. Come on.
Oh my God. No, I remember Brian Stan and I crossed the border at one point because he had to get his legs waxed and pay off a bet. We couldn't find somebody in Missouri to wax a man's legs. We had to go to Kansas. So there you have it.
Hey, Missouri's the side you want to be on.
Yeah. All right. The show me state. Hey, good stuff as always, brother. We'll talk to you. Big pay-per-view coming up next week. So we'll talk to you next month.
See you, dude.
Thanks, guys.
There he is. Absolutely love having James Krause on this program every week. I really do. And he is going to be with us throughout 2022 as well. And I got to think Font Aldo, kind of like the ultimate win for Ken Flo a little bit, right? Because I know you got a place in your heart for Jose Aldo, but if the fucking Lemonster kid.
I can't lose. Rob I don't lose here.
Can come through here. I mean, are you kidding me? And
if you could be a champ.
That the Chihuahua analogy, it's not like a, I don't think it's a shot at all. Like, I am going to make that comparison on the airwaves. A lot of time during those arena fights to make those comparisons. And by the way, Rob Font had COVID-19. And had he not, he might have gotten that opportunity to fight Piotr Jan on Fight Island instead of Corey Sandhagen. Now, could be a case of be careful what you wish for, or Rob Font could be an interim UFC Bantamweight champion already. Either way, biggest fight of his life is coming up, and it's in about five more sleeps. All right. If you want merchandise to support the show, you can do that. AnnickFlorianPodcast.com. Special promo right now. Code is FAM15. Gets you 15% off. AnnickFlorianPodcast.com. Don't forget Ken Flo's YouTube channel as well. And remember, the show will be live this Thursday night with Bilal Muhammad and Jason Anik on this very channel. One More Sleep merchandise is yours at millions.co. Thank you to our guests, Ray Longo, James Krause. Our executive producer is Cody Merrow. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Thank you all for listening. We are back with you next Monday to preview the monster that is UFC 269, Oliveira versus Poirier. Until then, for Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. Thank you all for listening, for watching. Tell your friends. You'll fucking later.
I'm Royal Oaks. Next time on Too Many Lawyers, we take on a couple of villains to sort out whether bad stuff is also illegal stuff. George Santos won a seat in Congress by lying to voters, but is that a crime? And Kanye West made it clear he hates Jews. In England, he'd go to jail for that. Here in America, did he commit a hate crime? Listen to Too Many Lawyers on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.